Hello, I'm Ed Russell, Senior Managing Director at Tortoise. Thank you for joining us for our 2016 year-end, 2017 Outlook Quick Take podcast. I'm joined today by Tortoise Portfolio Managers Brian Kessens, James Mick, and Rob Thummel. We're going to discuss key topics of interest and provide our energy sector outlook for 2017. And with that, let's begin. Rob, what's the broad energy outlook for 2017?
You know, 2016 has really been a great year for the energy sector. When you look back at the U.S. energy sector in 2016, it was really a milestone year, with 2016 being the first year that the U.S. exported U.S.-produced crude oil, natural gas, and ethane, which is a natural gas liquid. You look at investor sentiment. Investor sentiment towards the sector has flipped and is now positive. And we're entering a new era with the recently announced production cuts by OPEC and non-OPEC producers. This means oil prices are expected to remain stable and to eventually move higher, which is a positive catalyst for the entire sector. Now, additionally, President-elect Trump has talked about achieving American energy independence and eliminating excessive regulatory burdens on the industry. So in summary, the table is set for the U.S. energy sector as we move into 2017.
James, what's your MLP outlook for next year?
Sure. I think given the backdrop that Rob just highlighted, we have a positive view for the MLP outlook for 2017. Just quick background, we would expect returns to be in the neighborhood of 12 to 15% with potential upside from there. And that return breaks down as follows. The yield on the Tortoise MLP index is currently about 7.5%. We anticipate distribution growth for the index of 5 to 7% for 2017. So that in total generates the 12 to 15% return noted. Additionally, though, we could definitely see a compression of the yield, meaning that the market multiple trades higher if energy sentiment continues to improve. Just as an example, the 3, 5, and 10-year median yields on the index are 6.0, 6.1, and 6.5%. So if we simply move back closer to those averages, the total market return will exceed the 15% that I mentioned. Now, some of the factors that could cause us to move back closer to those yields, one, an uptick in growth expectations, supply growth in commodities resumes, increasing volumes, and of course, leading to new projects. Two would be an increase in investor appetite for yield-oriented products such as MLPs. And then three, just relative value of MLPs to other yield-oriented asset classes such as REITs and utilities. Of course, that's just a couple of factors, but it does give you an idea of what could happen to cause a higher return. And then on the flip side, higher interest rates may pose a near-term headwind, and of course, OPEC compliance is clearly something that will be seen. But in general, we are positive on the space and see the potential for higher production to help bring back some of the supply push projects that have been waning during the commodity price downturn and will help support distribution growth, along with the current slate of demand pull projects.
Brian, what's the C-Corp pipeline outlook?
Sure. We're largely agnostic, MLP versus C-Corp. For corporate pipeline structure, and what James discussed largely holds for C-Corp pipelines as well. We think pipelines in the ground are increasingly even more strategic assets, essential to support increasing oil and gas production. For C-Corps, cash flow multiples are in line with historical averages, and with an index yield of around 4% and dividend growth of 5 to 7%, we expect total returns to be in the low double digits. An added benefit could be if the corporate tax rate is reduced.
Rob, since you spent so much time this year on CNBC talking about crude oil prices, can you tell us what we think about the upstream sector in 2017?
Sure. I'm going to focus on the North American oil and gas producers as well as oil field service operators. So $50 really seems to be the line of demarcation. If oil prices stay above $50 per barrel, we expect to see oil producers increasing capital expenditures, which ultimately results in production growth. Now, U.S. producer response to lower oil prices has been remarkable, as some oil producers, particularly in the Permian Basin, have lowered their production costs to levels that allow U.S. producers to compete in the global oil markets. In fact, some U.S. producers produce oil at cheaper costs than some OPEC countries. But there is more to the U.S. energy story than oil. Natural gas producers, specifically in the Marcellus Shale, are expected to grow production volumes and to respond to rising domestic as well as international demand for cheap U.S. natural gas. From an oilfield services perspective, offshore drillers will remain challenged in 2017 as commodity prices remain too low to encourage significant deep water type of drilling. Onshore drillers will likely be able to boost revenues as they raise prices for the first time in several years. Additionally, demand for sand is forecast to accelerate as increased sand concentration tied to the fracking process has been one of the ways that oil and gas producers have been successful in increasing the volume of oil and gas recovered from each well drilled.
Brian, can you share your thoughts on the downstream sector?
Sure. Given our expectation for higher crude oil prices next year, refiners had a headwind from higher input costs that could be offset somewhat by wider differentials to the extent bottlenecks occur from greater production. The biggest item for refiners to watch for next year might be reform in renewable fuel standards that mandate a certain amount of ethanol blending. Today, the biggest cost after crude oil for merchant refiners is the compliance cost of buying renewable identification numbers, or RINs. For utilities, we expected continued generation investment in cleaner energies like natural gas, wind, and solar to drive growth. Yet given their historical correlation with interest rates, higher rates next year may weigh on their stock performance.
Brian, we're getting a lot of questions from advisors about the president-elect. What specifically about a Trump administration leads you to have more confidence in oil and gas?
Yeah. Trump's publicly made energy a central part of his agenda, supporting oil and gas and reviving the coal industry. Several of his appointments are to oil and gas supporters, and none of those is bigger than Exxon's CEO Rex Tillerson to the role of Secretary of State. He also picked former Texas Governor Rick Perry to head the Department of Energy, and the Attorney General of Oklahoma, Scott Pruitt, to lead the EPA. Further, he's already indicated support for the Dakota Access Pipeline and in restarting the Keystone XL pipeline project to bring more crude oil from Canada to the U.S. We think energy companies can invest more confidently over the next 4 years with less concern over federal delays. There is one potential negative with this backdrop, which we've already mentioned, which is an increase in interest rates following Trump's plan for a fiscal stimulus.
James, let's stick with that issue. Interest rates are expected to increase next year. How will that impact MLPs?
Well, it's a great question, and it's one that we're getting frequently from investors, just given the recent rise of roughly 75 basis points in the 10-year Treasury since the election. From our view, we evaluate the impact of rising rates from both a direct and an indirect basis on MLPs. First, just from a direct standpoint, there's an impact to the extent that a company has floating rate leverage. The key mitigating factor is that midstream MLPs are approximately 80% fixed rate debt, so this impact is very minimal on their cash flow. Second, from an indirect standpoint, we look to assess the impact on the weighted average cost of capital and returns over and above that cost of capital. While you could see some increases in the cost of debt and equity, there are several mitigating factors in our view that help lessen the impact of the higher rates and ultimately allow companies to continue growing their distributions. A few of those mitigating factors are 1, excess coverage, 2, internal versus external growth, and then 3, the ability to pass through inflation via either higher rates or volumes. Next, we simply look at what history's shown us. What we've seen historically is that when rates have increased by 50 basis points or more, the return of MLPs has actually been quite positive and similar to what you see in the S&P 500. In fact, MLPs have averaged a 6.4% return based on the 12 different time periods that we have noted previously. This compares favorably to the S&P 500 average return of about 6.7% for the same time periods. And finally, I'd point out two more important data points. First, we evaluated the spread of the MLPs to the 10-year Treasury for two different scenarios. The first is when the 10-year is above 4%, and in those instances, the average spread to MLPs is roughly 266 basis points. The second is when the 10-year is below 4%, and in those instances, the average spread to MLPs is roughly 450 basis points. The key takeaway is that as the 10-year moves higher, the spread is historically not a linear function, but rather will compress, hence MLPs don't have to trade off simply because the 10-year is moving higher. And then second, we ran correlation data for the 10-year Treasury to MLPs and confirmed that traditionally, over essentially all time periods, including 1, 3, 5, and 10 years, the correlation is exceptionally low and actually is lower for the more recent time periods. One more indication of our view that MLPs trade more as equities as opposed to fixed income due to the growth component. So in summary, while you may see some near-term impact on MLPs from rate moves, we feel that the data points to a more positive story and history has shown that to be the case as well.
Thank you, James. Let's switch to commodities. Rob, crude oil prices are in the news daily with a tug of war between OPEC and shale. What do you expect to happen in 2017?
Our expectation is that both OPEC and non-OPEC producers carry out the commitments agreed to in early December. What happens next is that global oil supply begins to fall while global oil demand continues to increase. As a result of that, concerns regarding excessively high global oil inventories will subside, as global oil inventories continue to fall and ultimately return to historical or more normal levels. From there, oil prices likely remain range-bound between $50 and $60 a barrel in 2017. But this is a real sweet spot, as certain U.S. producers can still earn adequate rates of return at these prices, but just as important, global consumer demand remains high as well.
Brian, what about natural gas prices?
Well, it's been cold, and inventories are below where we were last year at this time. Supply has been relatively flat this year, and next year expect continued increased demand, notably from more coal to natural gas switching and power generation, greater exports in the form of LNG as additional facilities come online, exports increase to Mexico, and industrial activity increases along the Gulf Coast. From those sources alone, demand could be at least 4% higher. If the winter is even moderately cold, supply is going to need to get going. For that reason, we think natural gas prices remain stronger next year, north of $3 per MMBTU.
Okay, I'm going to open this up to all three of you. What are any surprises you think could happen in 2017? Brian, will you start?
While there has been a fair amount of M&A activity in 2016, particularly in the Permian Basin, we think 2017 could result in even more activity for several reasons. Capital markets are open for energy issuance. Stock prices have rebounded from lows where sellers now feel that they aren't selling at a bottom. The Trump administration, as we've already discussed, provides a better oil and gas investment climate, and bond prices for high-yield energy companies are closer to par. Buyers no longer have to pay a significant bond premium to the seller's debt holders. Specifically, MLPs share this same rationale, including the desire to lower their cost of capital through simplification. Look for that, too.
Thanks, Brian. Rob, what about you?
You know, the export theme that we highlighted is expected to accelerate, and could be a surprise. The U.S. possesses a lot of low-cost oil and natural gas, and we haven't been able to say that for very long. So as global demand for oil and natural gas continues to rise, the U.S. will be a critical supplier. Even with OPEC cutting back on production, OPEC's spare capacity is relatively low. What this means is that U.S. oil and gas producers will likely continue to increase production volumes. In addition, additional energy infrastructure will need to be constructed to support increased exports of U.S.-produced oil and natural gas.
Thank you, Rob. James?
Yeah, I think just given the interest rate backdrop, we think that you could see a larger rotation out of bonds and into equities. This could, frankly, be a pretty big factor in helping drive the market higher. Of course, a lot of investors are still likely to be focused on finding yield, especially to replace those fixed income investments. We think MLPs can benefit from this. We've looked at performance of a couple different asset classes since the election, and it's interesting to see how things have responded. Just generally, REITs are flat. Utilities are down about 2%. The 10-year treasury is down a little over 6%. Meanwhile, MLPs are up 6%. We think that the positive energy backdrop bodes well for capital to flow into not just MLPs, but energy broadly.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Brian, James, and Rob. That concludes our discussion. Thank you for joining us and for your support. This will be our last podcast for 2016, so we wish you a happy holiday season, and we'll speak to you again in 2017.